Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Tig Notaro is a comedian. She'll be at the Wilbur Theater on Sunday, recording her first ever HBO comedy special in front of a live audience. Now, we've had a lot of comedians on the show, but Tig Notaro happens to be one of the funniest people I've ever talked with. First of all, there's that name.
Having the name Tig, a lot of people come up to me that are huge fans of Winnie the Pooh. And Tigger, too. This one woman came up, she said, "Oh my gosh, I just have to tell you, I am such a huge fan. So much so that I changed my name to Pooh." Why Pooh? Why not Winnie? Or even the...
Okay.
I forgot about that joke.
It's a good one.
It's so stupid.
Is it real? Is it based on someone actually changing their name, or is that part the joke?
Yeah, it is true. Somebody did come up and say to tell me. It sounded like they were going to tell me they were a huge fan of mine, and
yeah.
Only to find out they really, really follow Winnie the Pooh.
But you made the most of it, which seems to be kind of a theme of your life and your work.
I guess so. I mean, I definitely try to take note of what's around me and make myself feel better. And that's what I did during the point in time when my life fell apart.
But let's back up a bit. Back to Mississippi and Texas, where she grew up with her older brother and mother.
Wow. This is going to have to be longer than 20 minutes. Well, my real name is French. It's Mathilde. And that was also my mother's name. Mathilde, and that was also my grandmother's name. And I went by Tig, my mother went by Susie, and my grandmother went by Teal. So my brother made up Tig when I was two, and I've gone by it ever since. And I don't know, he was just like three. I don't think he had any rhyme or reason to how he came up with my name. My mother was very... very much a funny, gregarious, artistic, wild person. And she used the outside of our house as her canvas and would paint animals for me and my brother to look at. She'd climb trees with us, and she was kind of the crazy, cool mother. But then also there was conflict between us because there were times where I just wanted her to be at home and cook a meal and not be wild. My mother didn't care what anyone thought about her, and she would always tell me to, if anyone had a problem with me, to tell them to go to hell. And I think there is this streak that she left on me that helps me make my way in a more secure fashion than I think I would have otherwise.
Yeah. Did that have some kind of, I don't know, conscious or maybe even some subconscious influence that led you to comedy?
Well, yeah. And like I said before, my mother was a very funny person as well. When I go back to Texas or Louisiana or Mississippi, which is where we're from, or, you know, different family members, and they always remind me of where I got it. I mean, I'm a very mellow version of my mother. She was always, to me, the funniest person.
Well, let me ask you then, when did you know that you wanted to be a comedian?
Well, I remember when I was in seventh grade, I was playing on the street with a friend of mine, and she said, "My mom thinks you should be a stand-up comedian." And I remember just feeling so exhilarated because I was always considered funny and weird, mischievous, all that kind of stuff, and class clown. But to some degree, it was, as I got older, kind of a negative thing. And it seemed like all of a sudden my humor, it felt like it could be kind of directed. Like, oh, yeah, I guess some people become, there's a job for that.
But what is it about comedy? I mean, other than the fact that it from an audience perspective, I mean, it just feels great to laugh. But for what is it about comedy that made you want to do that?
Well, I mean, I was already doing it all the time.
Just
that was
naturally,
how I approached, yeah. It's how I approached everything. And it's how my mother approached everything. And the fact that I could go off into that and, buy a car and a house and support myself is insane. It's just what I do. It's how I think. It's how I move, It's not a decision that I make.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting that you said it was seventh grade when your friend's mom mm-hmm. said you should be a stand-up comedian. Because do I have this right that you dropped out of high school in ninth grade?
Well, seventh grade is the last grade that I actually graduated. I mean, and barely. And then I went on to eighth grade and I failed that. And then I was in eighth grade a second time and I failed it again. And then they just moved me into ninth grade, I think, just so I didn't toss myself off of a building. And then I failed ninth grade and then I just dropped out. And I think at that point I was like 47 years old and looking around the classroom and seeing people I used to babysit. And I was like, I gotta get out of here.
Okay, so this is one of those moments as a host where you're telling me a very serious thing about your life, but because you're a comedian, you're delivering it in a way where I'm trying not to laugh.
Why would – I mean, I don't know.
But this is serious, and I don't want to laugh. But
it's not serious. I mean, that really happened, but I mean, I don't care what you laugh at. I mean, I ended up getting my GED, and my cat ate it.
God.
That sounds made up, but I came home one day, and it had been sitting on my kitchen table, and my cat ate a quarter of it, and there were little bite marks in the rest of it. And I just was like, well, there you go. I mean, that's how important it was ultimately.
Okay.
And my cat, I'm sure, digested it, and it ended up in the kitty litter box. I wish I had dropped out sooner, honestly. Everything ended up being fine. You know, to me, it's not sad. I love that I have weird stories.
You may be one of the toughest interviews I've done because I really don't want to laugh at some of this stuff. And I'm sure there are listeners out there who are like, this is actually not funny. It's a serious thing. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, indeed. So there's that thing that Tig Notaro does. She finds the funny in the heartache of her own life. You laugh even if you don't want to. Because really, who wants to say that they were cracking up listening to Tig Notaro talk about her sudden diagnosis of breast cancer?
Hi, how are you? Is everybody having a good time? I have cancer. How are you?
Which is exactly what she did in 2012.
Ah, it's a good time. Diagnosed with cancer.
It was a brave breakthrough performance. Louis C.K. was in the audience, and he later said Notaro's set was one of the best he'd ever seen.
Feels good. Just diagnosed with cancer. God. Oh, it's fine. Here's what happened.
2012 had been an awful year. First of all, Notaro got pneumonia. Then a horrible intestinal disease. Then her mother died suddenly. That wild, funny person Notaro adored. She fell, hit her head, and just died. And then, as if that weren't enough, as if Notaro were the butt of some cruel cosmic joke, she was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Found a lump. Got a mammogram. I ended up getting biopsies, which is painful. Feels like being stabbed. I felt like I'd been rear-ended all day and then just dropped off back at my house. I couldn't move or anything. And it was so like intrusive and horrible. And I was just like, God, after all of these like ice pick stabbing feelings, I better have cancer.
It gets very awkward and people aren't laughing the whole set. When I was on stage, I would look out and see people laughing, people just with their mouth agape in shock. I saw people crying, and it was just that whole time that I was on stage, I saw all of those different emotions the whole way through.
Somebody over here just keeps going, oh. Oh, I think she might really have cancer. Who's taking this really bad? Oh, it's okay. It's okay. It's going to be okay. It might not be okay, but I'm just saying. It's okay. You're going to be okay. I don't know what's going on with me.
I'm not a superstitious person, but I started to think maybe I was cursed. I didn't know what was happening because when I would kind of make my way through a tunnel in the darkness and I'd kind of see the light, then another dark tunnel would get put on. And I really, it was relentless and I...
I mean,
you're allowed to laugh.
That time I didn't feel very funny on the inside.
Well, when I was diagnosed with cancer, well, it was. And when I was diagnosed with cancer, I became like crazy. It was like maniacal laughter. Just, I had to get things cleared out of my head. I couldn't just go up there and pretend like something wasn't happening that was really, really happening. And I wanted to make light of it in the best way so that people could hopefully enjoy themselves while they were listening to me do what I thought might have been my last show.
So you just actually gave me the answer to the question I was about to ask, which is it seems so risky to decide to – you know, want to talk about this thing, which is really tragic and unfunny on stage as a stand-up comedian. And I was going to say, like, why take that risk? But I feel like you just asked it because you didn't know if you'd have the chance again.
So I knew that there was that possibility, but I also knew that there was more of a pull to take that risk and trust myself and my ability.
Yeah,
and every time I've taken a risk, I can't believe the payoff. It's really, really exciting.
At this point in our conversation, things were getting pretty heavy. But comedy is never really far away when you're talking with Tig Notaro. She finds it everywhere. I mean, listen to this clip from a rooftop comedy video linked on Notaro's website.
I did some shows in Mexico. And like everywhere I go, as soon as I check into my hotel room, I immediately hang the do not disturb sign on the door. Or for the Spanish speaking, no moleste. Nope. No moleste. Not tonight. Try a couple doors down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care what it is that makes people think of me or ties them back to me or what I'm known for. And I authentically also just love silliness. So I love doing that. Mm-hmm. I love doing whatever I want to do.
As she says, she's taken risks and they've paid off. Her career really took off after that gutsy 2012 cancer set. Tig Notaro had a double mastectomy and has performed topless at times since then. And just last month, Showtime premiered Knock Knock, It's Tig Notaro, a documentary featuring her and comedian John Doerr as they travel around the country performing in people's homes and backyards. And we've got a clip of the documentary here where Notaro and Doerr stop at a roadside store that sells fireworks and tombstones. And Doerr wants to buy her a headstone.
I'm not joking. I'd love to do this for you.
Okay.
I'd buy your headstone if you buy the base.
All right. Because I'm more than happy to just have that.
You should have this, don't you think?
Okay.
What is that without this?
That is a base.
Yeah, but what are you going to do with a base?
I'm going to go under it.
So I've heard this clip many times now, and each time I've laughed. It just encapsulates Tig Notaro's take on life so very perfectly. After talking with her, I came away with this feeling that to her, comedy is like a binary star system. It's heartache and humor orbiting each other brightly in the darkness.
I always call myself the luckiest, unlucky person in the world. I couldn't be a happier person, but I really have gone through a heavy load. And I think as long as people are interested in what I have to say, I don't mind what brings them to me.
Yeah.
Comedy is so complex, and I really don't know. All I knew is I needed to walk out on stage and kind of confuse the audience immediately.
Wow. Well, Tig Notaro is a Grammy-nominated comedian and writer. She's taping her first HBO comedy special in front of a live audience this Sunday night at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. It'll be so great to have you in town. We've got more information at our website, radioboston.org. Tig Notaro, thank you so, so very much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me. I cannot wait to do the shows. I truly cannot wait.
That's it for today and this week. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station.
Our show is produced by Amory Sievertson, Emma Jean Weinstein, Kathleen McNerney, and Jamie Bologna.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend and join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.